Hey, it's Glenn Thrush with Politico's Off Message podcast. Adam McKay is the Academy Award nominated director of The Big Short. He's also one of Will Ferrell's best friends. He wrote and directed Anchorman and Talladega Nights, but he's gotten dead serious lately. And his big issue is really Washington and Wall Street. He's a big Bernie Sanders supporter, not so much on Hillary Clinton. And at the time of this interview at the Ritz-Carlton in Georgetown, he'd just gotten back from talking to Elizabeth Warren, and man, was he fired up. But the most interesting thing we've talked about was something a lot of people deal with. He is really liberal, and his mother is really conservative, and they don't talk about politics. And he tells the story of how that relationship, at least the political relationship, blew up. At the end of the interview, he asked me an interesting question. He wanted me to find out if Hillary Clinton had seen his movie, and if so, what she thought about it. That said, here is Adam McKay. Well, I lived through the 2008 financial crisis as everyone else did. I got up in the morning, you'd look at like the CAC index and DAX and stuff, and you would just unload. Shit was just completely falling apart. And something that you have said in interviews, I think, has really stuck with me. The complexity of this stuff is really what keeps people from understanding it. But you've said that it's really not that hard to understand. Talk about that a little bit.
Yeah, well, you know, my approach to it was, obviously the first thing I did was read the book, which I loved. You know, right. Michael Lewis writes very entertaining books. They were great characters. I just hadn't read anything that had that much information coiled around such a great dramatic story. And I just thought, I have to make this book into a movie. So once I made that choice, you know, I had a fair understanding from reading his book. But the way I approached it was I wanted to have a muscular understanding of it. So I just started reading and asking questions, and I reread the book and I read other books. And we had a consultant on the movie, Adam Davidson, and he would come over and we would talk for 5-6 hours. And I listened to everything I could listen to, and I got everything. And then by the end of it, when I was able to explain it to my 10-year-old daughter, I knew that I basically got what it was. And then I realized it wasn't that complicated.
But wait a second. What if your 10-year-old daughter was way smarter than other 10-year-old daughters?
She's pretty bright, but I'll tell you the way I explained it. I mean, basically what I said was they figured out, they took a bunch of mortgages, they bundled them, mortgage-backed security. Mortgages were very safe at that time. They started selling them for slightly higher yield than the treasury bonds to big institutions. And it was great. Banks made billions of dollars. They started creating all these other different products, and they made a lot of money. And they ran out of good mortgages. So they started putting crappy mortgages in. The end. You could say that's the end. Now, of course, there's more. Then we go to CDOs. They took the crappy ones they couldn't sell. They put them in that. It got worse.
And the CDOs really, we're talking about, explain to people what a CDO is.
So mortgage-backed security is the bundled mortgages.
Right.
CDO is basically where they took a bunch of junk from other bonds that couldn't sell. They call them tranches or levels. And, you know, if you talk to Michael Lewis, he really thinks they designed those products to fail. That's his, I don't know if he has like a smoking gun on that, but he goes as far to say that they had done so much leveraging with the products that they sort of needed these CDOs to fail. And then, of course, you went into the CDO squared, and the synthetic CDOs were bets on bets on bets. You had all this trillions of dollars of debt being spread around, and no one was tracking it because it was a dark market, so no one had any idea.
And you had a Republican administration and a Republican Congress at that point in time that was cutting down regulation left and right, right?
Exactly, and I'll even say the Clinton administration with the Republican Congress also cut down a bunch of regulations.
I have sort of a theory of the case as to why we're dealing with kind of the Trump and Sanders phenomena right now. And I think Iraq, sort of the betrayal of Iraq, has crushed the Republican Party. It's created a lack of trust among the rank and file and their old leadership. It's funny, it originally manifested in the Obama phenomenon, but I think it's durable because of what it did to kind of the Republican psyche. I think what happened on Wall Street, which again was sort of like initially spawned the Tea Party movement, is having the longest term impact on the internal politics of the Democratic Party right now, and you're seeing it in the Sanders phenomenon. Now, you support Sanders. Tell me, is this an issue that you've always been concerned with, or is Sanders and Warren kind of touching something that...
It's an issue. I've been tracking money in politics for a lot of years. You know, we've all seen it just increase and increase and increase. And, you know, when Citizens United was passed, I wrote a piece for the Huffington Post basically accusing the Supreme Court justices of treason. They've undone our democracy. So I've been watching this happen, and I've seen this money wash over all of our institutions, even private institutions, just this change that happened in our country, I always like to use the comparison of baseball. You know, the fact that baseball was working, it was the American sport. They wanted more money, they wanted more home runs, steroids, move the fences in. They've destroyed the historic record. Baseball will never be what it used to be, and that was all for money. And there's example after example with private colleges and that whole scam and stuff. So my belief was that this really happened, this explosion on Wall Street. Yes, there's complexity that happened, there's greed within Wall Street, but it really happened just because our government got captured by the banks. That's it. The government was bought by the banks, and they basically could do whatever they wanted. There was no oversight. It's worse than the kid in the candy store. It's the kid in the mall that happens to have a candy store and a pellet gun store and anything you can imagine.
Or if the mall lets him sell crack along with the candy.
Even better. Even better. Yeah.
So
money and politics is my big
thing. And this has been something that you've been thinking about for a while.
Forever. So finally I got to the point where Bernie Sanders steps up and he goes, I'm not taking any money from banks, from oil companies, super PACs, weirdo billionaires. And I'm like, I'm tired of playing this game. That's my guy.
So in terms of, we have Hillary, and obviously we can talk a little bit about Glass-Steagall.
Sure.
Do you think Glass-Steagall, and for those folks who aren't familiar with it, Glass-Steagall separated vanilla banking from kind of more risk-taking investment banking, and it was allowed to expire under the Clinton administration.
Yeah.
Bernie Sanders has said he wants the reimposition of Glass-Steagall. Hillary Clinton, who used to be the former senator from New York, and Chuck Schumer were against that. How important do you think is Glass-Steagall, and has that been an influence on why you wouldn't support Hillary Clinton?
I think it's very important. I mean, I think there's an argument that goes on, did it directly lead to the collapse? No, but I would say it certainly increased the size of the wave when it hit, because it allowed these banks to become bigger and bigger, and certainly allowed them to fudge their capital requirements to a degree that I think became dangerous. So I would like Glass-Steagall to come back. I obviously think it can be modernized. I don't want to just ham-fistedly like bring it back, the old law, but I don't know why you would have a problem with that. We need those types of firewalls in the system. It worked before. You know, you hear a lot of people say it, but from the 40s into the 80s, we had no boom-bust cycle. We start stripping this stuff out, and now all of a sudden, it's every 6 or 7 years. It's not hard to track.
But we're in like a situation where we've kind of, and you know, people like Stieglitz, and I don't want to bore the hell out of people with this kind of like lefty economic theory, but you get people like Stieglitz who talk about, we're kind of at a dead end in terms of the productivity cycle. Like, the reason people keep doing this is because you can't make money off of manufacturing and kind of the more organic and constructive things that an economy does, right?
Yeah.
Isn't that sort of an underlying issue here that we're kind of like, in the West in general is kind of screwed?
Well, then we could get into trade policy.
Okay, maybe I'm getting way deeper.
I'll really get unpopular once I talk about trade policy.
Let me just let everybody know, this is the man who came up with Sex Panther, who I'm talking
about. Exactly. Keep in mind, I directed Step Brothers. For everything we're talking about, have a little asterisk next to it saying, this is the guy who directed it. Here's what I think. I think that because of this corruption, it has stopped innovation in a lot of ways. And there are plenty of things that we need to build and manufacture. I mean, we all know this carbon-based economy is not going to last. We're going to have to change. But because of entrenched power, because of the fact that the oil companies own half of DC, we're not seeing that change happen. So I think the two interact. But I always just go back to the fact that our government has been bought and paid for. That like 90% of the people working in Congress are completely bought and paid for. That's an extreme statement, but you know what I mean.
Are you a Democrat?
I guess I technically am. I voted Democrat. I'm registered Democrat. Yeah. I think of myself more as an independent.
But let's just say, and some of the prediction markets are saying Hillary's a 96% shot to get the Democratic nomination. Do you go for her or do you look for some alternative?
Depends who she's running against. I mean, obviously, if it's Donald Trump, I have to vote for her. It bums me out, but I'll probably have to hold my nose and vote for her. I'm not a fan of a lot of the things she's done, but she's not a wackadoodle. I mean, she doesn't believe that, you know, mankind was created 5,000 years ago. She doesn't believe that although she's pretty hawkish. I wish I could say she doesn't want to start wars out of nowhere, but she doesn't have she did vote for the Iraq war. There's no way. I mean, if it's Ted Cruz or Donald Trump versus her, I have to vote for her.
So you're cornered. But yeah. How do you get leverage? Now, it sounds to me like if Elizabeth Warren were running, she'd be somebody you'd also like, right?
I love her. I love Elizabeth Warren.
Have you ever met her? Have you talked with her?
I just met her today.
Tell me a little bit about
that. Meeting.
What do you think?
It was a great meeting. She had seen The Big Short. She loved it. She actually told me a great story. She said she saw it in Cambridge. she, you know, everyone in the theater was kind of aware she was there. It was a very, very pro Big Short type crowd that was there. So the movie ends and the credits are playing. And for anyone who hasn't seen it, the credits are a little bit devastating, although there is a Led Zeppelin song. So all is well.
I got to tell you, we talked about this before we started rolling tape. I am a massive fan of When the Levee Breaks. So you would get, if I was in the Academy, you would get my vote for best director.
So it's either that or Holidays in the Sun, and Levee Breaks won. So at the end of the movie, she says a woman she doesn't know just leans into her and says, "Senator Warren, is that true? Is that all true?" And she says, "Yes, every bit of it." And the woman just goes, "Crap, that's what I thought." So she was delightful. You know her. She's got that enthusiasm.
Oh, yeah.
I don't know if there's anyone you hear talk that just radiates sincerity more than her. Like, she really sincerely cares. There we go. Thank you. That's only because I had When the Levee Breaks at the end of my movie. That's the only reason I'm getting
but
that.
You know, the thing about her, and I did a big profile of her last year. I would very much like for you to read it, even though you won't. And one of the things that I really learned about her is she has a really steely political intelligence.
Sure.
And the way she's playing this, as far as I can tell, unless things have changed, and we were talking, she gave a kind of a barn-burning speech on the floor of the Senate a couple of days ago. What she wants is to leverage appointments. She cares more about if Clinton is elected, she wants to have some say in who the Treasury Secretary is. She doesn't want Larry Summers lurking around anymore. I mean, do you think the people matter as much as kind of the ideas?
I think that's still sincere. I think that's not cynical politics. That's using your voice and leveraging yourself so you can be the most effective. You know, I think when politics gets cynical, or when I start hearing someone talk and I'm like, they're not really talking from the heart. They don't really believe this. It's when they're taking money for their votes. It's when they're saying something that's a personal attack because they know they have to. They're appealing to a religious base because they know they can get some cheap votes from a group that doesn't understand they're voting against their own economic interests. So that kind of stuff, I think, is very smart. If I were her, I would be doing the exact same thing.
Now, in terms of, you've played around in this political stuff for a while. There's a lot of political subtexts in, like, Talladega Nights. And that one, you were sort of dealing with the red-blue state stuff. That's gone, even in the, how many years ago is that, 6-7 years ago?
God, I longer can't than remember. That, right? Longer than that, it might be almost 10 years.
Right. Yeah. Things have really, to a certain extent, polarized even more, right?
Yeah. Yeah, as crazy as it is, yeah. I mean, I really love that speech that Bernie Sanders gave at Liberty University. I wrote a piece for Huffington Post the first week that it started. And the piece was when I was shooting Talladega Nights. I said, why aren't there Democrats coming down and talking to this NASCAR crowd?
Right.
Yes, they would get booed. Yes, people would be hostile. But someone needs to be getting these messages into this world. You're giving up on working class people, Americans, states that matter, and there's just this political game of who cares. So I loved it when Bernie Sanders spoke at Liberty University.
Do you want me to blow your mind?
Please.
I am about to blow your mind. You said they used to call them NASCAR Democrats, and the organization that went after NASCAR Democrats, the Democratic Leadership Conference, the centrists who Bill Clinton sort of lionized when he was president. Bill Clinton is kind of the last Democratic president to go after those people.
Wow, really?
Yes, I mean, that is really...
Why would they give up on that? That's so crazy.
It wasn't, I don't know. Yeah, it's
a long-term strategy, maybe that's it. And they live election to election.
Yeah, but you get in your movies, what's so cool about Talladega Nights is, you know, I'm sure people love that thing in the South, man.
Oh, like, absolutely.
So you are not doing that thing that a lot of liberals do, which is culturally bashing the hell out of everybody.
Oh, no.
There's a lot of love in the way that you're doing this.
Well, we all have relatives from the South. I've spent time in the South. I actually love the South. But we just wanted to look at that kind of crazy pride that was going on at that time behind George Bush, and NASCAR was kind of the epicenter of it. And we ended up having an amazing time. To this day, it's still a movie they play in NASCAR all the time. There's a bunch of drivers who like love it, and you hear it quoted down there. So yeah, that's the thing, is I think there is like too much of a separation between the Northeast, the West Coast, and the South. And I tried to convince my wife at one point that we should move to like Louisville or Birmingham, and she's from New York City and then Chicago, and she didn't even answer me, I don't think. I think she's left the room. Yeah.
And you hear like the rubber burning in the driveway. But you sort of got it, right? I mean, haven't you kind of figured out that trick about the not condescension? I guess you kind of got to love it.
Yeah, well, I mean, that was even with The Big Short. You know, my belief was, look, I was a guy who was, I was an English major when I was at Temple University. You know, obviously I'm a writer, all that kind of stuff, did theater, film. I don't know that much about economics. So when I read these books and when I started investigating, I was able to see it like an average person.
Right.
And so we really tried with this movie to go, look, we didn't entirely know about this. We don't think you do. Here's our best way of explaining it. Hopefully you're with us. But yeah, if the movie had ever condescended, and if Talladega Nights had ever condescended, I think it instantly, all the air comes out of the balloon.
But what's interesting also is that, like, you have people on the right who, the Tea Party movement, was motivated by the same lack of trust in the same institutions as the Sanders movement on the left is motivated by. Isn't it interesting and sort of frustrating that, like, most of the people, and I mean you no disrespect here, most of the people who are going to watch this are liberals in the Northeast and on the coast, right?
Yeah.
So,
although we've had some states like Texas and Florida, we've had some good theater counts on the areas right. where they got hit from the housing crisis. Right. We actually have had people going. And the cool thing with movies now is when they go on demand, DVD, cable,
people get to...
everyone sees them. So I'm really excited about that stage for this movie. But continue. I know what you're saying.
Yeah, but I mean, do you feel like you can affect hearts and minds on both sides on this? And why that? I guess the question is, no one's ever really fused the anger on both sides. I mean, is there any, do you think there's any way to kind of...
My entire kind of... Every interview I do is answering that question exactly, which is this should not be a right-wing, left-wing issue. My dad lost his house. My mom and her husband had three neighbors walk away from their houses, which drove down their property values. My mom's a right-winger. My dad's a left-winger. This should not be a right-left issue. So everything I've been talking about, this is about money and politics. This is about our government no longer being our government, instead serving the banks. And that's what this should be about. We got a tweet from Bill O'Reilly supporting the movie. We got Greta Van Susteren supporting the movie. We had James Woods supporting the movie. And then obviously we've had a bunch of lefties. This movie should not bother anyone on the right or left. This is about money and this is about government capture. So that's my hope for this movie. I mean, I would love it. No movie is ever going to directly create reform. I don't know if that's ever happened in the history of cinema, but hopefully we can be a sand pebble.
Last Tango in Paris?
That's true. Last Tango in Paris created the EPA, I think, directly out of
it
that.
It should have.
Yeah, yeah.
I think it caused hysterical blindness.
By the way, the label of this episode now has to be Last Tango in Paris created the EPA.
I like that.
That's the title.
You're very quick. You should do this stuff for a living. Now I want to hear about your parents. Like, so when you say your mom was kind of a right winger.
Not kind of, full on.
Like, not George Wallace.
Well, she's, you know, they're children of the 60s.
Because you're like 47.
I'm 47.
You and I are exactly the same age.
Yeah.
Yes.
So my parents were kind of hippies in the 60s and 70s. In the 80s, my mom definitely leaned left. She remarried in the late 80s, and her husband was a right winger. She was always kind of religious. And then now they're both full-on evangelical Huckabee Fox watchers, as far right-wing as you can imagine. My dad, on the other hand, is still a musician. He's a professional musician, also runs an insurance company that's his
bass
own company.
Bass player,
sings a little bit of guitar, been playing for years. He's very fair-minded, left-leaning guy. He's not like a super lefty,
right.
but he's very reasonable. You can talk to him and say, actually, that number's not right. And he'll go, oh, I didn't know that. Very open-minded
so
guy.
Who's your mother? Who's your mother supporting?
My mother is, that's a really good question. We don't talk about any of this because we learned.
You got to call her up right now.
Oh my God, I almost would. They love Huckabee, but I don't think they're supporting him. You know, they're a little upset by the Republican primary. I have to say, I have heard them complain about how there's no good choices. If you made me guess, I'd say they're Marco Rubio is probably who they're going with.
I mean, that's, you know, Marco, he reads moderate now, right?
Yeah, but still.
So when did you decide to impose the moratorium on political discussions?
It's a great question. 6 years ago. 6 years ago, I said to my mom, let's never, ever again do this. Let's not bring up religion. Let's not bring up politics. They couldn't help it for a couple of years. There was still some, like, they would send me crazy email forwards about how in English schools now they're not teaching about the Holocaust because Muslims don't want to know about it, which I don't even understand.
I personally think that's reasonable. It's very upsetting.
So I write them back and I was like, you know what you're saying is like, I hate crime. Like, this is, so we don't talk for a month. And then like Christmas comes and, you know, my wife's Jewish. So my daughters, we do kind of half Jewish, half Christian. And my mom makes some comment at like a Seder telling everyone this is great.
Your mother was at the Seder.
Well, my mom came to a Seder of my wife's family. And in the middle of the dinner tells everyone, you know, this is great and all, but since you're not accepting Jesus, you're all going to hell.
Are you kidding me?
I'm not kidding. And so,
now, instead of a cup for Elijah, it was for Huckleberry.
Exactly.
Right, yeah.
Now we have found a pretty good common ground. We just don't talk about
What do you talk about?
It's a really good question. We talk about like my daughters. We talk about their love of music. We talk about what we're going to eat.
Yeah.
We talk about what Americans talk about. We talk about what we're going to eat, our kids. And hey, you got a great deal on that shirt from Marshalls. That's pretty much what we
talk
about.
By the way, I love Marshalls.
Marshalls.
I grew up
fantastic.
On Marshalls.
Fantastic.
Everything's slightly irregular.
Yes.
Which I felt was
I grew up
very...
on Marshalls and thrift stores. My mom would get me the nicest clothes at thrift stores.
Okay, since you're my age, I got like 3 minutes. But like, since you're my age, did you ever go to the Sizzler?
I can't believe you just asked me that question. I am not kidding.
Yeah.
4 days ago, I was telling my producer, Robin Woolley, I would go to a Sizzler right now.
Yes.
I love Sizzler.
I love
the junky garlic bread, the potato in the tin foil.
The high you get off the tenderized meat.
Oh, I grew up going to
Thank
Sizzlers.
You. I just wanted to, I feel we have a shared cultural
that
experience.
That is like a literal heart connection. Forget when the levee breaks. Sizzler is like, and then when I was in college, you could go to Sizzler and for like $4.99, kind of all you can eat and free refills.
And if you were under the, well, whatever, we won't really
go. Yeah.
Well, because I have no other way to do a transition, we got to go. What do you think of, we were also talking about, I really have to do some sort of a transition. Maybe I'll just play some music.
Okay.
Obama, the great, who I'm sure you liked in general in 08, right?
I voted for him. Yeah, yeah.
Little disappointed with the Wall Street prosecutions?
I think it's the biggest shame on his presidency is that they didn't put any bankers in jail and clearly didn't make the effort. They never assembled a team of prosecutors. There was no real concentrated effort. And then I think you have, you know, people from his Justice Department going and working for law firms. Eric Holder working
right.
for big law firms that represent banks. I think it's the biggest shame on his presidency. I think, but he's done a lot of great stuff. I do love that he's been more aggressive about climate change. I did think the healthcare plan, even though it's flawed, has done a lot of good. I've been a supporter of it. I like that even some things he hasn't been able to pass, like the gun control thing or gun safety laws, right. He's been very vocal about it. So overall, I think he's done a very solid job. We have seen slow growth, but better and better and better. I do think he's a little too positive on the banks. I think they are still too big to fail, and he might not agree with that. I think, in fact, they're definitely still too big to fail. But overall, I would give him a thumbs up.
And the last thing is, has he seen, I know he likes Michael Lewis. He's talked to him a lot. Do you know if he's seen the movie?
I was told he saw the movie by people that know him, but I didn't hear any review. I mean, he certainly couldn't love the part where we don't name him, but where we kind of blast the government for not prosecuting bankers. He certainly had to feel that one a little bit. But, you know, the stimulus package worked. The stimulus package was a positive. And even though Dodd-Frank was very watered down, some of it's helped. So, yeah, I would assume he, of all the presidents we've had for the last 30 years, would feel the least sick to their stomach watching the movie. I would think Clinton would not enjoy it. I would think George Bush would not enjoy it. Reagan would not have enjoyed it. But I would think Obama could get through it.
Well, over the next couple of weeks, I cover the Clinton campaign. I will endeavor to see if she has seen the movie and try to find out what she thought of it. Adam McKay, thanks so much for taking the time.
My pleasure. And will you honestly please try and see if she really saw the movie?
I will. I'm not kidding.
I would love that. And thank you so much for having me, man. This was fun.